This is The Lonely Office, your playbook for navigating the messy line between work and life. Our topics are sourced from real anonymous workplace conversations happening within Glassdoor communities. From AI taking white-collar jobs to talking politics at work, we discuss timely work-life issues so you don't have to brave the professional world alone.
So my Twitter exit didn't go as I had planned.
Okay.
And in the first 5 years I created the profile, I made some great connections there, like life and career changing connections. But the last 5 to 7 years, the most recent ones, totally different experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Less and less people were seeing my tweets, less independent and regular voices in my feed. Even if I adjusted my preferences, it was just celebrities, pundits, motivational speakers.
Yeah.
If I did see any tweets from the Twitter normies, they were just arguing and fighting over what these influencers were shouting about. It was mob culture, and I wanted to leave. And it was really affecting my mental health, if I'm going to be honest with you. So I decided that I was going to make one last tweet.
The final salvo.
And I wrote, I'm leaving Twitter.
That's it.
Here's the embarrassing thing. That wasn't it. Okay. Because instead of just writing that and gracefully deleting my account, I got to admit this. I waited for several days. I wanted to check one last time to see if anyone said anything or responded. Nobody saw the tweet. Matt, you said one retweet. I got zero.
Oh, man.
Not even your mom.
Nope. Mom's not even on Twitter and she didn't care. And frankly, it may be the saddest exit from any platform in the history of social media.
Stop. So dramatic.
This was more of a therapy session than anything. I think it does set us up in a really interesting way. I talked about normies and regular voices being on platforms, in this case, Twitter. I considered myself as an independent artist, as a normie, meaning I didn't start with any groundswell of support. I didn't have a name or anything like that. All I had was my stories. All I had was my podcast. I started slowly building connections. Other influencers reached out to me on that space and provided opportunities and collaborations. But then in the last 5 years, when I started seeing the fruit of it, it just went away and turned into this monstrosity of a celebrity influencer driven place where we're all at the behest and on the crumbs of these talking heads who are fighting with each other. And it was sad. And so was my exit.
Well, if it makes you feel better, by the way, one of the reasons you probably didn't get any engagement on the last tweet is you got black boxed by the platform. No platform is going to promote an exit of their users really broadly.
Are you loud quitting Twitter? If it makes you feel better too, now it's X. It's not even Twitter anymore. So
I think you hit on the nose, Leia. There's a lot of tumult in social media right now. You got the sudden rebranding of Twitter to X. And when I say sudden, I mean their own CEO, I think her name is Linda Yaccarino. She probably got new the same time as everybody else did that weekend. With everything going on at Twitter and then Threads coming out, Meta coming out, it's pretty strong, at least out of the gate with Threads, although usage is down a bit. There's just a lot of tumult in social media, really making people rethink what's the purpose that a platform, a text-based platform like Threads or Twitter should serve. If you ask most people where our society's civic discussion, talk about politics, talk about economics, talk about society, where is it happening? Chances are they're not saying it's happening at the local church. Then it's not happening in the bowling alley any longer. It's happening and it's been consumed by social media. I think most of us would agree with that. Whether we like it or not, and whether it's good or not, how often do we see New York Times, Journal, NBC News tweet and retweet posts from Twitter on these topics of civic discussion? That's the reality. Now let's look at some stats. On average, 50 to 60% of this country engages and votes in our national elections. So just around half of people turn out civically for national elections. 30 to 40%, a third turn out for state elections, and 15, well, less than a third turn out for local elections. Those are the participation rates that engage in civic discussion, let's call it, on a voting basis in America. Now, Pew Research shared a survey recently on Twitter specifically. The top 25% of users by activity on Twitter produce 97% of all tweets. So almost everything you're reading on Twitter is being created by the top 25% of users, basically the loudest voices in the room, to Aaron's own story. The bottom 75%, of course, then just produce 3%. Here's another dirty secret I'll let you in on. I think you ask any entrepreneur who's built a social media platform, they'll tell you, When you look at the most common metric, which is monetizable monthly active users or monthly active users, the percentage of users on your platform that actually post is anywhere from 1% to 5%. Meaning this activity metric that they sell you on is like, oh, we have 300 million active users. No, the vast majority of those 300 million, they are lurkers and readers. They are not posting. In fact, if you look more deeply, of the monthly users on Twitter, maybe only 5% at most are contributing content. So you have a super minority in this country of people posting on the number one civic engagement, civic discussion platform in the world, or at least in the US, Twitter. And you have the popular media framing this as the place for civic discussion, but yet only a super minority is posting. So what kind of distortion of reality are we living in where you have less people posting on this than people who actually vote in this country, even on local elections?
I thought you could have mic dropped right there and we could have just ended the podcast.
That's a great setup. I was wondering if it was the premise to a dystopian sci-fi film that's coming out at Christmas time. It's what we're living in, Matt.
If it passes the Bechdel test.
What's that? Saying.
But what's then the I'll Bechdel watch test? It. If there are two women in a movie who have a conversation that is not about men.
Oh.
It's a low bar. But it's, you're not going to find that in Oppenheimer this weekend.
You're not going to find that in Oppenheimer. You're not going to find that in Barbie.
What? You are going to find that? Are you crazy? Have you seen Barbie? It's good, guys. You should see it. You really should.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Cool. I stand corrected.
You'll be surprised.
So I think the thing for me is that social media is not a good place for civic discourse. I'm sorry to tell you. It's just not. Functionally, comment sections, there's just not a way to be able to have a conversation or a debate. It's like being on the highway trying to rationally talk with someone who's going 120 miles per hour past you. Everyone's behind systems that protect them. Everyone doesn't have the culpability of being in front of the other person.
Right.
Is there now a social and really, I would say, moral responsibility for founders, for creators to create spaces that at least try to aspire to the best of us rather than the worst of us?
Look, we don't want to create nostalgia for the way things were, but if you look at grassroots activism or grassroots civic discussion, right, it's not the loudest person in the room who's dictating the discussion and facilitating the learnings and the conversation happening. All these networks have been designed really for the loudest person in the room to be advantaged. Even looking just recently at Twitter, they just rolled out their new advertising ad rev share model where it turns out, depending upon the amount of impressions you get in the comment thread of your post, you share revenue. Of course, we know the type of posts that generate the most comments are the most polarizing posts. And so you have figures like David Tate raking in $20,000 a month. For him, nothing. But the very fact that you have these extremely polarizing figures getting paid disproportionately, I'm not even talking about against David Tate, but the super minority getting paid, that's a problem. Reddit is the same issue, by the way. Reddit, now I'm a power user of Reddit. I love it. But one problem with Reddit is when you go to a subreddit, they've gamed it so that the users with the most karma, they crowd out everybody else. And if you try to make a comment or a post and you're a noob or a newbie, your content is really not shown any level of engagement. And I would say it's not only is not healthy, it's destructive to reward the loudest voices in the room when those loudest voices are less than 5% of the population.
Well, and that's how new social media like Threads are pulling people in, right? That's the promise of you could shoot to stardom. So all of a sudden you could go viral unexpectedly in a way that you can't on more established platforms like Reddit or Twitter.
Until you can't.
Yeah, right? until
Facebook or Meta decides to perhaps monetize in similar ways.
And that's the thing about these platforms that are so frustrating to me, just even as a user. And I always try to re-educate myself to go, remember, there's puppet strings here, right? And it's not editorial in the way that we're used to it being editorial. So on YouTube, I've had six short stories get over 1 million views out of 100 that I've posted. And I've had one that got 16 million views. The one common thing, the biggest common denominator was that people were fighting in the comments.
I know.
These stories were innocuous. It was like a story about my grandfather looking back at his life in the Depression.
You hit on the nerve necessary to get rewarded by the algorithm.
Yeah.
So my thought is, oh, I'm telling this very nuanced story that we all can relate to on a human level. But one of the things that really drove that speed of the algorithm was 20% or 30% of the people saying, oh, are you saying that you weren't poor? I told a story about dandelion salad and my grandfather. Okay. I'm looking in the comments here. I got people who are like team Aaron and team someone else. What is happening here? People say, well, turn the comments off. Well, if you do, then they turn off the tap and no one sees your shit.
I have been known to either just delete a video or turn the comments off because I don't want to engage in it. But you're not going to go mega viral unless you do. And also unless you stoke the flames. I mean, you have people on TikTok, which I know is a video rather than a text platform, but who are purposely posting things like that to stoke an argument. If I'm posting about trying to get Taylor Swift tickets for my kids, I'm not expecting someone to be like, I hope your kids die. So when it gets to that, I'm, you know what? This is not what I'm here for.
But so if people are using it and they're more lurkers, the middle, but don't they just want to be lurkers, Matt?
Right.
Knowing what you know about what you've built in the past, are they lurkers just because they've defeated? They're defeated.
The fact that you have such a small minority of the silent middle normies posting, in fact, just being lurkers, I think it's not just because they want that. And I think Threads, by the way, is an example of that point too. You've seen a lot of people make the point about Threads is that it's refreshing because they don't feel crowded out. They don't feel like the loudest voice in the room is kind of just crowding them out and they can come engage.
Yet.
That said, I think a fair question to ask is when it comes to the polarizing content piece, there's a lot of studies on this, are the platforms just feeding us what we want? Or are the platforms feeding what's good for them? It's easy to believe that platforms are doing this because it feeds the advertising dollars, because it's a very clear route where you see that more polarizing content generates more clicks, generates more ad revenue. But psychologically speaking, there's been plenty of studies on the fact that this is what we desire as a species. We love to be excited and stimulated and our neurotransmitters to be activated and the dopamine hits to come. And so which is it? My whole point is if we can agree that social media has become the de facto forum for civic discussion, then there should be responsibility on the players or the operators of these platforms to treat it as such. What does that mean? That means in your desperate attempts to monetize a network, you don't necessarily go as far as generating a rev share indiscriminately that rewards really polarizing super minority posters because that distorts the reality field. But we don't look at it that way. We've always looked kind of social media, it's a business and there's a business model behind it. I'm not advocating the government get involved and start sanctioning and regulating as social media as a platform for civic engagement, but I do think they need to study it a lot more closely so that people aren't warped by it and that you do get more of the silent middle normies engaging in a way that's healthy for society.
I mean, social media has killed our attention span and we're talking about topics that need more time and conversation than you can even fit within a tweet or a TikTok or whatever, more than anyone has attention for, because you're right, we're being fed the exact amount of content that we want to be. And if we're not, we just keep scrolling, we keep swiping. It's also, we pretend it's a meritocracy and a democracy who's going viral on Twitter or whatever, but it is a business.
The reality is no one could see, at least I know as a user, I could never see this being the central focal point for civic discourse in our country. That sort of realization really puts a real responsibility on new founders and new iterations. So my question, Matt, to you is, okay, for people who are in the space now who are going, okay, I want to create a new platform, do you feel it is something that, knowing what they know, a sort of new normal has to start?
I mean, I think Musk on record has gone and said he's purchased Twitter because he felt that freedom of speech was being hindered. I think there's been an acceptance about social media having ills, an acceptance that the way social media platforms are being operated is it is canceling some people at the cost of other opinions, but there's been no solution. And the one loudest voice in the room who's proposed and acted on a solution turns out is desperate to monetize the platform and now in dire danger of making the platform even worse, going against his own credo as he tries to monetize this thing and generating a platform that hurts users and facilitates less civic discussion as a result.
I was just saying we need an entire other podcast about the updates that have happened to Twitter that I don't agree with personally.
Here's the hard truth. There aren't a ton of options for people in the middle, either just to be heard or to create and build a career. It's this necessary evil now that you feel that you have to tap into. And if you leave, like when I exited Twitter, there's a cost to that.
Even if you were to solution it and say, hey, I'm going to create a new platform that does X to respect democratization of voices? I don't think anyone has really provided ideas on how to democratize distribution of voices. Do you rely on a all-knowing omniscient algorithm tweaked towards our own base preferences?
Sure.
Or yeah. Do you have gatekeepers? And the gatekeepers thing is almost like a recall to the past, right? So we just came out of the 80s and 90s where you had the MTVs of the world dictating music choice. You had the New York Times of the world dictating opinion on politics and economics. And one of the reasons why people took to social media is they didn't want those gatekeepers. What's the solution here to democratize equal distribution of voices? It's a really hard problem to solve.
Well, you started the show by saying there's a consensus that whether we like it or not, this has become a forum for civic discourse. And if that's a consensus, then there must be a consensus to say this is not a good forum for civic discourse. We're not using this, but everyone wants to use it because there's an incentive there. Listen, farmers, literate farmers, would sit for 3 hours during the Lincoln-Douglas debates, 3 hours, and listen to contentions and rebuttals. Do you know the great thing about a story when you're telling it, why I love telling a story? People don't talk because there's a mutual agreement between the orator and the audience. My point is, it's the boundaries that make it civil. It's actually the space that you take, not typing, not formulating your next argument, not putting an emoji. It's the silence that you use to think and reflect on what is being said before you post on it 2 seconds later. This is the problem, is that there is no space to breathe, to think, to reflect. And the one thing about those good old days is that the space existed for us to formulate those opinions that are novel and that ascend. The problem is we don't have that space, or we choose not to make it. The only way to make the space is to stop using it. And that's a conundrum right now because I can't stop using it.
I think a lot of people are passionate about this. And the oddity here is that they're so passionate about it, they're choosing not to post and engage and be lurkers because it just frustrates the hell out of them. There are improvements you can make to existing systems or new systems to try to begin to solve this. If we can begin to appreciate the level of nuance that represents a valuable response in a social media thread that's informed through some sentiment analysis to understand, and AI can help here. Of course, that's like, what's the AI and what objective parameters, subjective parameters? But ultimately, I do think you could begin to try to design an algorithm that looks at the sophistication and nuance of comments in threads.
That's right.
To bring them up. Nobody's saying drown out the others, but hey, instead of bringing up the most polarizing, loudest comment in that thread that creates this distortion reality, let's bring up that comment in the thread that's the most informed and nuanced, and let's bring that up. And so at very least, you're exposed to that before you're exposed to all the other noise. And that's just something that at its core, social platforms are not incentivized to do, and for that reason, have not done.
I remember Edward James Olmos in the film Stand and Deliver, and the quote that stuck with me was like, the students will rise to the expectations given. And so like, right. To a certain extent, I'm wondering if it can get so nuanced to a point where it's not outright censorship, right? It's not just because you say something that's in opposition or you're expressing an opinion that's unpopular. It's actually the way that you do it.
You want a level of that because you want a level of honesty in the face of tyranny, but you also want a level of accountability so that you're not just demonizing the other side. That level of articulation is what civil societies do. And I think we are a civil society. We've just forgotten it because we've been inundated with our social media feeds and shown the worst of ourselves the last 10 years.
Okay, I don't think you said it outright, but a lot of these platforms, I mean, are you saying it without saying it that they're not really business model? Like they shouldn't be a business model. And is there a way to have it as a business and still try to maybe implement some of these features that you're suggesting and talking about to a way to elevate the conversation?
It's really hard to build a viable business model on a social media platform. And I think we're going to find out this is the case with Twitter.
Maybe it's still a little bit of social activist guy from my 20s that's speaking out here. But my first thought was, okay, if we've recognized that these massive businesses have knowingly or unknowingly have become and transformed into the civic space, a public space. We didn't know it, but it actually became a public space. And just like we do with public parks and libraries and things like that, there has to be not only gatekeepers, but guardrails. There has to be sort of a transition, right? So I'm not trying to say I'm a Bolshevik here. I'm saying, does the government have to come in and say, actually, we're going to extract this. This has become now a detriment to the public good. We need to transition that now and transition it into a public space.
I think the market is in a better position potentially to do this, only because we have a history of relying on public corporations in the broadcasting space, right? NPR, Public Broadcasting Corporation, they receive public grants and public funding. I think depending upon which camp you fall in, some of the opinions they share either are mainstream or aren't, right? And you can almost argue maybe the government has unduly influenced those. I also feel like there's more distrust with the government than ever at any other time. And some of the Edelman Trust Barometer polls we've talked in previous shows have spoken to this. If you did have a social media platform financed or publicly backed, there's going to be even more distrust for that versus a private one.
Or taken over, in my suggestion. Like, meaning, what if there's a federal mandate? I'm just saying, this would be just for fun. Right. Like, the federal mandate goes like, actually, no, the U.S. government now has taken over Twitter.
I think that would scare people even more than
Twitter. I know, that's what I'm saying. Basically, it's coming apart at the seams because the market is saying, this is not a good business model.
Let me be clear. So Facebook is an amazing business, right? I mean, they've proven it. So I'm saying social media platforms that aspire to create a relatively healthy civic discussion platform or forum for civic discussion, that's not a viable model. You can't both be a viable business model and provide a healthy forum for civic discussion. You can't do both, right? Facebook failed at it. Twitter failed at it. You can't do both. Now, if you don't care about the civic discussion part, you can go to town and make all the money you want. Sure. TikTok's doing fairly well. Facebook Meta is doing fairly well. What's interesting about Twitter is the audience and the user base have embraced it so holistically as a civic discussion forum, text forum.
Right.
And they almost refuse to give that up.
That's right. So ultimately, I'll just end here by asking a question. Whatever even this new frontier is, it looks like we need gatekeepers there, right? It sounds as if even if we have a new frontier, there has to be some sort of structure or gatekeeping mechanism in the same way that there's rules to a game.
I don't think we need to be afraid of it. Any economics student learns that perfect markets don't exist. The reason why you have regulatory agencies in the government coming and putting its thumb on the perfect market, quote unquote, is because they don't exist. And you do need regulatory bodies that just don't press the thumb too heavy on the scale. And so I think here too is a similar analogy. You do need some level of oversight or guidance that's not a heavy thumb on the scale, but that guides the platform and its conversation towards a healthier place. I don't think we should be afraid to admit that because that's what our economy is. That's what the American experiment is a balance between markets operating independently and outside regulations. And anybody who doesn't realize that, frankly, doesn't know the reality of the way our market works.
Hey, you made it. Thanks for tuning into The Lonely Office. If you like what you heard, follow us on all major podcast platforms so you don't miss an episode. And make sure and tap 5 stars and leave a review. I know everyone says it, but it actually helps others like you discover the show. Remember, the topics you hear us talk about on the show are sourced from Glassdoor communities, where professionals are having candid conversations about their careers anonymously with others in their industry. To be part of that conversation, download the Glassdoor app. And when you're in the app, make sure and join the Lonely Office Bowl. That's where we are. When you're there, you can suggest a topic idea or an episode idea, or you can make it more formal and email us at thelonelyoffice@glassdoor.com. We'll catch you next time.